Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here to get you guys ready for the Bengals' upcoming matchup with the San Francisco 49ers. The Bengals are about to host another game here at Paul Brown Stadium, the third game in a row that the Bengals will have at home, and they're looking to flip the script from a disappointing loss in which there was a lot of stakes at hand in that game against the Chargers. I think the Bengals were hoping that game went a completely different way than it actually went, but they're going to try and get it right for this game against the 49ers. And although the 49ers aren't in the AFC, it's a big game because basically losing to the Chargers in that one game put the Bengals at the number 7 seed in the AFC playoff picture. From here on out, the Bengals are pretty much in must-win mode for almost all of their games. I think they can maybe afford to lose one more game and get in, but it would be good for them to be able to kind of get their mojo back against a really good 49ers team. The record doesn't really show how good the 49ers are. They're 6-6, but very well-coached team with a very solid run game and a dominant defensive front.
Yeah, my focus is, from the Bengals' perspective, turnovers on offense and defensively, what the Bengals are doing over the middle. The biggest concern for me is the points they gave away against the 49ers, specifically three of the best players on the entire offense in Chase, Mixon, and Williams, leading to turnovers that led to touchdowns or field goals on the other side. And then defensively, replacing Logan Wilson, it's a crucial part of the year, now having to take away the lead communicator from the coaching staff to the defensive players on the field. Those are the two big issues that will determine what the rest of the Bengals season looks like. And the 49ers have a very good reason that they can create some issues in those areas as well.
Yeah, and let's spend some time talking about the second point you just made about Logan Wilson. For the first time this season, and we knew it was coming because it happens to every NFL team, specifically at this point, this late in the season, the Bengals are being struck by the injury bug hard right now, harder than they have all season long. Last week, they were without Riley Reiff and Trey Hopkins, and it made a huge difference. Joe Burrow was sacked a season high 6 times against the Chargers. When you went back and watched the film, rough day for Isaiah Prince and Trey Hill. So the Bengals are glad to have Hopkins and Reiff back, both practiced yesterday, and also ends point to them being able to go. But on the defensive side of the ball is where this team is banged up, and it couldn't have come at a worse time because of who they're going to play this weekend. Logan Wilson has been the Bengals' best tackler. He's been their green dot guy. He makes sure everybody's lined up and they know the play calls coming in from Lou Anarumo, and he suffered a shoulder injury against the Chargers, and it's unknown how much time he's going to miss. The Bengals didn't put him on IR. I think they're hoping that he's able to get back, but I believe the report said he dislocated his shoulder, so who knows how severe that's going to be. Behind him, calling the plays for the Bengals defense, who's going to be wearing the green dot, is Jermaine Pratt, who Lou Anarumo seems to be pretty high on, but at the end of the day, nobody is going to step in and replace the type of production and just knowledge of the defense that Logan had created. And then the other big injury that the Bengals are dealing with on the defensive side of the ball is Chidobe Awuzie is injured with a foot injury right now. He didn't come back into Sunday's game against the Chargers. He did not practice yesterday, and he is going to not practice today, Thursday. So the Bengals could potentially be without their star middle linebacker and their top cornerback, depending on what happens with Awuzie. Good news is they're getting Trey Waynes off of IR. He hasn't been activated to the 53-man roster, but they do have him if he's able to go. But you don't like injuries at those two positions, right, Charlie?
To me, this is the Lou Anarumo game. This is the game where scheme and execution have to overcome everything that you just mentioned. The thing when you play the 49ers and you play a run scheme as detailed and as nuanced as theirs, they use a lot of 21 formation, they line up a bunch of different players in the backfield, have the ability to use receivers or tight ends in creative ways as well. when you face that team, it's all about rules. The biggest similarity is the Ravens, probably, because it's all about rules when you play that kind of complex run game. And how quickly the Bengals are able to learn and execute the rules with new players playing new roles in the middle of the field in particular, it's going to entirely come down to, again, scheme and execution. It's the game without two of your best playmakers in Awuzie and Wilson, most likely, and with Jesse Bates not quite playing at the high upside level he's had this season, and in a style of game where maybe it's not as conducive to Trey Hendrickson making a huge impact. The biggest star on the Bengals defense has to be Anarumo.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see the way Lou schemes up this defensive game plan against the 49ers, knowing Kyle Shanahan's one of the best coaches at making adjustments in the middle of the game. So I think it's very much going to be a game of a chess match. And I thought what Anarumo said, we just spoke with him about DJ Reader's role in this game. You can't understate how good DJ Reader has been this year for the Bengals defense. We don't talk about him much because of his position. Interior defensive linemen don't typically get the love they deserve, but we're going to give it to DJ Reader on this podcast because when I went through the numbers, he ranks in the top three, according to Pro Football Focus, in run defensive grades. He's only behind Aaron Donald and Cam Hayward. When you think of those two names, you think of all pros, future Hall of Famers, top of the league at their position. DJ Reader hanging right there behind him, and as Anarumo said, he is the cornerstone to this defense and how it all ties together. And the Bengals have been very good against the run, and Reader's been a huge part of that.
I like to look at how the Bengals were built. Look at what they did since their first full offseason in 2020. They added Reader, a pure nose tackle on the defensive line. They added Larry Ogunjobi, a converted nose tackle who has provided good pass rush as a three technique, but also, most notably, was known for what he could do against the run. At safety, they got Von Bell. One of his biggest strengths is how many plays he's able to make in the box and how strong of a tackler he is against the run. They've developed Jermaine Pratt and elevated his role. Logan Wilson was seen as one of the surest tacklers in his draft. The exceptions to this trend are probably Awuzie and Hendrickson, but even Trey Waynes, who I know hasn't played, might play this week. But Trey Waynes was known as one of the best tackling cornerbacks in the NFL when the Bengals signed him. So many of the moves the Bengals have made were specifically designed with run defense in mind. And again, now it comes on execution and executing the rules based on the 49ers scheme for how well a lot of run defense-minded players are going to be able to perform on Sunday.
So let's talk a little bit more about the 49ers offense. Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo is the game manager, runs the show, but they've really gotten a lot out of Elijah Mitchell at running back, but he is dealing with some injuries. He didn't practice yesterday with some knee irritation, and he's also coming off of a concussion. Deebo Samuel, who is their do-it-all player, who is just having a phenomenal year, he's also dealing with an injury and is questionable for this week. Then it obviously all starts and ends with George Kittle at tight end, who's just a force in the run game but can also make plays in the passing game, and the way they utilize Kyle Juszczyk as their fullback, and then Trent Williams playing as good as any left tackle, wouldn't you say?
And I think so much of this game, with the pass game in particular, that the 49ers are doing will evolve around tight end George Kittle, one of the best in the league at his position. It's fascinating. So going through all of the times teams have targeted their number one tight end against the Bengals this season, Logan Wilson was guarding that tight end more than anyone else in the Bengals. Obviously, Wilson is out on Sunday. So what options do they have against Kittle now in the stretch when the Bengals are going to be playing a Pro Bowl tight end or an All-Pro tight end in four of their last five games? I'm expecting a lot of Von Bell in particular. He's been the best downfield coverage guy on slot fades, on seams up the middle against linebackers this year, or against tight ends this year, making a lot of standout plays in one-on-one coverage. And then it's possible, too, it's something the Bengals did against TJ Hawkinson of the Lions and Mark Andrews of the Ravens, incorporating the cornerbacks much more, tight end coverage in particular. I wonder if Trey Waynes is back, if that's a niche role he carves out, kind of doing that Trey Flowers role versus Baltimore. Shadobi Awuzie did it against the Lions. Because Waynes has size, do they fully treat the tight end like a receiver and use a premier corner on them? These are going to be the questions that determine how the Bengals' rest of the season goes, definitely how the pass defense goes on Sunday.
Yeah, because if they leave George Kittle in single coverage with Jermaine Pratt, Kyle Shanahan's going to dial that one up all day. So hopefully they've got more of a plan for that. I'm sure they do. So let's flip to the other side of the ball. The Bengals' offense starts and ends with their ability to take care of the ball. When they've been good at not turning the ball over, they typically win and the offense flows. been an issue for this offense. You can point to a number of different things as the reasons why Joe Burrow leads the league in interceptions. Some of them have been his fault, some have not, i.e. the Jamar Chase that should have been a touchdown drop that he had that turned into an interception. Joe Mixon fumbles the ball, just not a sharp performance. And this offense has got to get to a level where they are consistently sharp, starting with Joe Burrow, because these next five games, he can't afford to be giving the ball away like he has. It actually, he said yesterday when we talked to him, he said he's disappointed at the number of interceptions that he's had. And this is the maturity part of a quarterback. The quarterbacks of the Tom Brady's and the Aaron Rodgers of the world that have been doing it for a long time, they know in December it's about who takes care of the ball the most. And that will be where we see Burrow needing to grow the most, because these games, I'm expecting a lot of them to be close, potentially coming down to the last play of the game. That Burrow and this offense cannot afford to give the ball away like they have recently.
But here's the thing, I have such a hard time talking about Joe Burrow's interceptions, because you group them into categories and there's not one that stands out the most. Early in the season, I was most critical for how many interceptions he was throwing to the linebackers or dropping defensive ends. He had that big one against the Bears, and then he had a big one against the Packers. It was a big mistake he made a couple times in training camp as well. But he hasn't done that since. Now, for the last couple weeks, his biggest, I guess, the biggest trend on interceptions has been a nose tackle or a defensive tackle coming up the middle and throwing kind of a fade, usually towards the sideline. He did two of those to Chase and then one of those last week to Uzama. That resulted, but that's still just three interceptions. There aren't a big category of mistakes that Burrow's making. Yes, the turnovers have to change, but that's something to where I don't know what you fix to prevent those. And right now I see it more of a symptom of the Bengals offense more than anything else.
Well, I think you prevent them by starting faster. I think you don't put him in situations where he feels like he has to do it all. Because when you asked what was behind the terrible interception he threw against the Chargers late in the game, he said he was just trying to force it. When the Bengals can just let him play and not make Joe Burrow have to feel like he needs to be Superman, not spotting, you know, a three-touchdown lead, I think that's how you really eliminate turnovers. Because when you look at the Jets game, the Chargers game, some of the games where he's had these costly turnovers, it's when they've been playing from behind. And that's been an Achilles heel for the Bengals offense all year, is their inability to start fast. So I think if they're kind of able to flip the switch here these last five games and get off to a faster start, I think that could potentially help with Burrow cutting down on the interceptions and the offense as a whole eliminating the turnovers.
It's funny that we're talking ourselves in circles here, chicken and the egg. What's happened in three of the Bengals' last four games? Turned the ball over on the opening drive. Pick six against Cleveland, the strip sack fumble against the Raiders, the fumble against the Chargers last week. It's a turnover league. You're seeing that with the Bengals. You're seeing why the turnover margin is something that coaching staffs always speak about. And again, I'm not quite sure what to say about the offense. I will say this, though. It's what makes it so crucial that guys like Jermaine Pratt, guys like the outside cornerbacks in particular, including Von Bell at safety, that's why it's crucial that they're doing a better job creating turnovers, specifically over the last 2 weeks, because that's what the Bengals defense had been missing. You're seeing with the Bengals offense how crucial it is towards game outcome, and you're starting to see the flip side and kind of the help with the turnover margin coming from the defense.
The offensive line needs to play better, a lot better than they did last week, and you're hoping that, like I mentioned earlier, getting Reef and Hopkins back will help. But Nick Bosa is tied for fourth in the NFL with 12 sacks. The 49ers have long been known for having a solid defensive line with Eric Armstead and DJ Jones up there, and then obviously Fred Warner is one of the best, if not the best, middle linebacker in the NFL. I think there's some advantages that the Bengals definitely have in the secondary going up against the 49ers, corners and safeties that who are also pretty banged up, but in order to be able to exploit that, protection's got to be better for Burrow. But I wonder how Burrow is gonna, like, if he stays away from trying to throw the ball Fred Warner's directions, because Fred Warner is he's a game wrecking linebacker that I don't think the Bengals have really seen a linebacker as good as Fred Warner this season.
So I think over the last 5 weeks, probably since the Ravens game, the Bengals offense has had more consistency in its schematic ideas than it has at any other point, even over the last three seasons. So, Ravens game, they target Anthony Everett. Raiders game, they target, and I'm going to mispronounce the name, Faison. Steelers game, they target James Pierre. Last week, they target Tavon Campbell. They've had a run now of week number two corners that they've been able to go against. And the 49ers right now are a very similar type of secondary with weaknesses and with multiple cornerbacks who there will be the opportunity to see a one-on-one matchup and take advantage of. That's what makes me think this won't be a huge, running backs in the passing game or a huge CJ Uzama game. That's what makes me think that T. Higgins has to play for this to work at its optimum level. But if T. Higgins is healthy, this is why it could be another big game for him. Depending on if teams make an adjustment to T. Higgins, more opportunities for Jamar Chase, who I think had a really nice game with one play withstanding against the Chargers last week. I mean, this is what the Bengals were built to do, create mismatches in the passing game against teams like the Chargers, or against teams like the 49ers.
T. Higgins is dealing with ankle injury and did not practice on Wednesday, but there was a lot of other players who didn't practice, so I think today's practice availability and tomorrow's will be more telling of what Higgins' status is going to be this week. You're hoping for a bounce-back performance from Jamar Chase this week. If they're able to get some of those explosive plays going, they would have had a big one against Chargers, but Chase dropped it, which resulted in an interception. He said, look, I've got to beat double coverage. He's seeing a lot of cloud coverage, but at the end of the day, his job is to figure out a way to beat it and continue to make plays. And I think it seems like it's been a little bit since we've seen the Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase connection down the field. And will this be a game that we see it? It has all the makings to, based off what we just said about the Bengals versus the 49ers secondary, but you just don't know how these games will play out.
So I'm not concerned about Jamar. Is like, look at what he's best at. He's still doing that at a really high level. So, like, the difference between Jamar and T. Higgins is T. Higgins' deep plays, think the catch against Pittsburgh for a touchdown or the catch against the Chargers for a touchdown. He'll almost even keep the cornerback on his hip sometimes and then post him up and make that contested catch using his height and size, his vertical athleticism. Chase is a different style of athlete. Chase is much more of a shooting guard compared to T. Higgins' power forward. Chase beats you in the first 2 seconds after the snap. Chase beats you at the line of scrimmage. That's how he's gotten so open when teams have guarded him a certain way. That's how he got 5 for 52 against the Chargers last week. And Jamar Chase is still creating separation. I mean, look, even at the two deep balls that didn't go his way, he still got separation. And while ball security has been the weakness, it's still a low enough percentage of the targets for Chase to where the fact that he's still playing to his strength enough. I mean, it's got him ranking 5th in the AFC in receiving yards and leading the league in Pro Bowl votes. It's what's got him having such a productive season.
Yeah, it's a huge game for the Bengals this weekend as they close out their 3-game homestand before they get back on the road next week to face the Broncos. Charlie, what's your gut reaction here? What's your prediction of this weekend's game?
Yeah, I think that while the Bengals played a sloppy game against the Chargers, the 49ers have a larger track record of playing sloppy football in all three phases. I think that with what I mentioned in the secondary with the 49ers will be a huge difference. I think that Jimmy Garoppolo won't be able to make 40-yard down the field throws, let alone 60-yard down the field throws like Justin Herbert was making. That's a weak spot for the Bengals defense, but Garoppolo isn't the type of quarterback who can take advantage of that. And I think that with what Hubbard, Ogunjobi, and Reader are able to do up front against the run will be enough of a difference.
I think that if Deebo Samuel plays, I don't feel as strongly about my pick. I could see the 49ers winning if he plays because he's that much of a difference maker. But if he's out, I envision the Bengals to win this one maybe like 30-17 and kind of get back on track because I agree with you. Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't have the arm strength that Justin Herbert has to kind of take the top off, and I think that was where the Bengals shot themselves in the foot. I expect a better overall performance, but we'll see because this is a game where I'm sure it's a 4:25 game, so you don't have to worry about the 49ers not being ready for the 1 o'clock East Coast game. There's a lot of different factors into this game, but has all the makings to be an interesting one because of the 49ers head coach, Kyle Shanahan, the way he schemes up his offense and game plans. And then on the other end, how the Bengals have looked when they lose a game. They typically rebound in a way that ends up being positive for them. So that's it for Charlie and I for this episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. We will be back, as always, following the game to give you our post-game analysis. Talk to you then.
All right, everybody, welcome back. And we apologize for the awkward break here, but due to some logistical concerns, Kelsey and I are unable to record together this week. So here we go. Let's hop right into it. I hope each and every one of you last week bet on both of my home dogs. That's right. The Pittsburgh Steelers won and beat the Baltimore Ravens, kept the Bengals in the division. And the Seattle Seahawks, thanks to former Mr. Bengal himself, Mr. Los, Carlos Dunlap, beat the San Francisco 49ers, who come into Cincinnati this week as 2.5-point favorites. We'll get to that later. But again, hope that all of you were able to take those home dogs and cash them. And yeah, let's get into it. NFL Week 14. I'm not going to do the Thursday night game, which is the Steelers at the Vikings, but I will tell you that I love the Steelers under in this game. The Steelers, the last, I believe it's 24 games they've played on the road, the under has hit 18 of those times. I could be wrong. I could be off by one or two, but it's been quite an impressive streak. So, if you're listening to this on a Friday, I hope I was right last night, which you probably will be listening to this on Friday. So, once again, Steelers Vikings under 43.5. And, just for the heck of it, I'll take the Steelers plus a 3.5, but not actually betting that game tonight. All right. Moving on to the actual action on Sunday. We've got the AFC divisional matchup between the Ravens and the Browns. AFC North action in Cleveland. The Browns come in as 2.5-point favorites. And the Ravens are banged up. The Browns are coming off a bye. Baker Mayfield's look awful for the last 3.5 weeks. But you know what? A lot of people, the betting money right now is on the Browns. They are -125. So there's not a lot of value there. If you want to bet them, honestly, -145 on the money line, I would go that if you had the money to do it, just to be a little safe, just to be safe in case it ends up being like a 1-point game or something crazy like that. But I got to tell you, what I like this week on this game, I like the value with the Ravens +2.5. It's a +102, so $100 wins you $102. I like the value in that. I like the money in it because I like the Ravens on the money line to pull the upset in Cleveland, which means I'm going to say road dog, Ravens +120 on the money line, first pick of the week. Let's get started hot. All right, moving down to Nashville, we've got the Jacksonville, oh my goodness, how bad can you be, Jaguars, going to play the Tennessee Titans, the Fighting Mike Vrabels, if you will. The Jags are getting 8.5. You could make this number 10.5, 11.5, 12 even, and I'd still probably take the Titans. So I'm going to go Tennessee -8.5. That right now doesn't have a lot of value. It's a -112. So it kind of balances out that Baltimore Cleveland line that I told you about. The other bet that I like in this game is the under. The line right now, according to Tipico Sportsbook, is set at 43.5. And that's a -110 standard bet, 10% juice. If you want, you're feeling a little risky, I would like the Titans -8.5 and the under of 43.5 to maybe a 2-team parlay, or you could do a tease it up to, 2.5, -2.5 for the Titans, and tease it to 49.5 for the under and go that route with a 2-team tease, kind of make up some of that -112, money there. Moving right along, the New Orleans, who is going to play quarterback Saints, travel to New Jersey. That's right. I will not call them the New York. They are the New Jersey Jets. That's because that's where they play. But the Saints right now are laying 5.5 on the road at MetLife Stadium. Taysom Hill, I guess, is going to play quarterback, last I saw. I don't care who's going to play quarterback in this game. I'm going under all day. The over-under is 43.5. I don't think either of these teams can score 20 points. So let's, once again, lay a little bit of money. It's a -115 line. Going under 43.5, Taysom Hill versus whatever the Jets want to trot out there for an offense. And let's make some money. Let's keep going on here. Another game that I like, moving on into the late afternoon slate, the 4 o'clock slate, the Las Vegas Raiders. Actually, no, this is a 1 o'clock game. I apologize. The Las Vegas Raiders going into Arrowhead in the outskirts of Kansas City. And they are getting 9.5 points at the Chiefs. I love the Raiders getting 9.5 in this game. It's a -103, which makes no sense to me. That's a lot of points for a division game. The Raiders do have a pass rush. And yes, the Chiefs have looked good lately. They've kind of gotten back to what they do, but they didn't really blow me away last week. So I would take the 9.5 points at -103, bet 103 to win 100 on the Raiders. And if you want to get a little nuts and you don't think the weather's going to be too bad there, you can get the over of 48.5 for -108. Make that a two-team tease. Give the Raiders 15.5. Get the over-under down to 42.5 and maybe make yourself some money on Sunday. And that ends the 1 o'clock slate for what the games that I like. Moving on to the 4 o'clock slate. The only two games I like in there are the Bengals and 49ers, which we'll get to in a bit, and the Bills and Buccaneers. The Buccaneers are one of the best teams in the NFL, clearly this year. The Bills, we all thought they were going to be coming into the season, but they really haven't been that this year. The Bills are getting 3.5 going into Raymond James Stadium, which replaced the Big Sombrero, which used to be a great stadium down there in the 80s. And the Bills getting 3.5. I like the Buccaneers all day in this spot. The line right now for the Buccaneers is -108. So the money's on the Bills at -112 to get the getting the 3.5. But I like the Buccaneers laying 3.5. I think this is easily a touchdown, if not more game. I mean, look. Monday night, the New England Patriots go in to, I forget the name of the stadium in Buffalo, go into Buffalo. You've got a winter storm to end all winter storms. Wind's so bad that it's denying the football before it gets to the field goal for kickers. Quarterbacks having to offset throws by 15, 20 yards possibly. Both teams had to run the football. Bill Belichick only had his offense, Mac Jones, throw the ball 3 times in an entire NFL game, and they beat the Buffalo Bills. Now, if you don't think Bruce Arians, Tom Brady watched that and started licking their chops because of the backfield they have with Ronald Jones and playoff Lenny Leonard Fournette, then you don't watch that much football. no, I'm just joking. But seriously, I love the Buccaneers laying the 3.5. Like I said, I think this is a touchdown or more game. The over-under, I also like the over, but so does the general betting public. It's 53.5, and it's a -115. So there's not much value there. If you like the Bills getting the 3.5, it's a -112. So the only way to really make value out of either of those is to put them together and try to get a two-team tease or a two-team parlay out of there. But hey, that's on you. Last game before we get to the home game this week of the Bengals hosting the 49ers is the Rams and the Cardinals. In Arizona, the great dome in Glendale, as I like to call it. Rams are getting 2.5 at a -105 clip. The Cardinals are laying 2.5 at -115. I got to tell you, I like the -2.5 number. I don't like the money on it. So what I'm going to go with in this game is I think this is going to be a shootout. I think the Arizona offense is going to be humming on all cylinders. I think the Rams are finally getting it figured out. I think this game goes well over 51.5. And the good news for you at home, if you like following my picks, that is a -105. So only have to bet 105 to win 100. If you like the under in this game, which the betting public does apparently, it is a -115. So last pick of the standard slate of games is going to be over 51.5 in the Rams-Cardinals game. Now, getting to the Bengals, hosting the 49ers. Oh boy, we could all use the honor system here. Raise your hands if you saw last Sunday coming. Yep, I don't think anybody did. I thought it was going to be a shootout. For my end of it, I think the Bengals could have won that game, not easily, but pretty simply if there were 2 catches made, you know what I'm talking about. And I honestly can't tell you what this team is right now because they look incredible for a couple weeks, and then they look like they have no idea what they're doing. So, moving on with San Francisco 49ers coming into town. Again, this game got flexed to 425 on Sunday, so don't be caught off guard. But the Bengals are getting 2.5 points, and the 49ers are giving 2.5 points. The 49ers, it's no secret what they like to do. They love to run the ball with that backfield, that offensive run scheme game that Kyle Shanahan employs, and they like to get downfield in a hurry. and control the clock and control the game. The Bengals can do that with Joe Mixon in the run game. They have not shown an ability to do that the last week, but 2 weeks before that, it looked like, you know, they could do that against anybody in the league. So I'll tell you what, the line that I like in this game, and it's going to double up for those of you listening at home or in your car or at work, wherever you are, the line that I like in this game is my home dog of the week, the Cincinnati Bengals, to win outright, plus 105 on the money line. Or you can take the points, 2.5 at a minus 112. And I like the under, 48.5 at a minus 108. Parlay those two if you want. Bengals on the money line at plus 105. And the under of 48.5 at minus 108. And we'll talk to you next week. Again, apologies for the awkward recording this week, but there was just a logistical problem that couldn't be overcome. So last thing, I'd like to remind everybody out there that these picks, bets, whatever you want to call them, are done solely for fun. They are not professional advice. And all these lines are provided by Tipico Sportsbook. Tipico is an official partner of Gannett Company, Inc., which is our parent company. Gannett does make money off this partnership, so please be advised of that. And if you or anybody you know has an issue with gambling, please reach out to 1-800-GAMBLER and get the help you need. Thank you, and we'll talk to you all next week.